BC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Not much. It's I finally took down the Christmas decorations around the house and started getting ready for the new year.
Now, when you take down your Christmas tree, do you do the super depressing thing where you just throw it in the street like a dead body, or are you actually like recycling that thing properly?
No, actually, I live in Long Beach out in California. They have a recycling program. They come by and pick it up on a specific day and take it to turn it into mulch.
That's fantastic, and I'm sure our basketball fans listening are super interested to hear this discussion. So let's move right along into the NBA talk. We had a few games last night. Least interesting in terms of quality of teams was the Kings and the Mavericks. Mavericks got the overtime win in Sacramento, 117-112. But the bigger story out there is the ownership situation, where the Maloofs, you know, all week we've had stories about their pending or potential or on the way sale to an ownership group in Seattle, which would have the Kings moving out of town as soon as next season. Can you bring us up to speed on what's the latest with the ownership situation in Sacramento?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It really depends on who you talk to and where you talk to people to find out what you hear on this story, because around most of the league and around most of the nation, and it seems out of the league office where they really want this to happen, the Seattle thing is moving along pretty quickly, that there's going to be a formal offer, that this thing is kind of done and almost a fait accompli. They have to get it done by March 1st to move the Kings to Seattle next season, which is huge. You don't really – a lame duck year in Sacramento would be just painful for the league, painful for the Kings, painful for everybody. So if this is going to happen, I mean, they can extend that deadline a couple of weeks, but – bottom line is that if the sale is going to happen, it's going to happen really fast within the next couple months. And it's a complex deal. We're talking, you know, $500 million sale. The Kings have a couple hundred million dollars in debt between the loans from the league and loans from Sacramento. So it's not, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. These aren't easy to put together. They've got to do it fast. On the flip side, if you talk to anyone in Sacramento, they think they still have a real shot at keeping this team, that there essentially will be a bidding war between somebody from Sacramento to keep the team and somebody, you know, and the Hansen Group to move them. And they think that there's a real shot of keeping the team. I can see that happening if there was a legitimate buyer for Sacramento. I'm just not sure who that is. I mean, everybody talks about Ron Burkle, who's a billionaire California guy. I've heard from multiple people that sale would not happen, that there's some animosity there, that some issues there that would really prevent him from being the guy who buys the team probably. So my guess is it's likely to happen, but at the end of the day, we're dealing with the Maloofs. And honestly, outside of turning a profit, I don't think there's anything they could do that would actually surprise me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what about that $500 million reported price tag for Sacramento? You know, the Memphis Grizzlies, who have a nice arena, they have a decent basketball team in place, they just sold for under $400 million. Is the debt the portion that's driving that price tag up?
Yeah, there is like $200 million in debt. I mean, there's the 77 to the city of Sacramento. There's more than 125, I think, to the league. That's part of, I think, what it is. And part of it is that Hansen's willing to overpay. He knows if he can get a team to Seattle in his new building, they'll be able to do okay. You know, that's a big television market. You know, what really drives in arena revenue at this point is, and I'm, you know, fans, I think, don't really realize this, how much more than 2/3 of your revenue comes from those luxury boxes and the expensive seats down by the court and all that. All that stuff is what really drives revenue now. Well, there's plenty of money in Seattle to buy those kind of expensive seats and expensive boxes. So he knows if he can get the team there into his new building, he'll be okay. And I think they're willing to overpay to do it. Plus, I think that this is a situation where, I mean, it's not that they want to lose money, but this isn't a pure investment for them. This is, you know, Ballmer and Chris Hansen, two Seattle guys who want to bring a team back to Seattle.
Well, and as far as the Kings are finding an ownership group to match in Sacramento, doesn't the fact that they really don't have an arena there complicate matters a little bit?
You know, you could get an arena done. I mean, remember last year around the All-Star break when they thought they had a deal, and yeah. Joe and Kevin Maloof were out shape, you know, accepting the warm plaudits from the crowd, and then George Maloof comes through and says, well, the numbers don't really work for us because they would have had to put in money, and they seem to be pretty darn cash poor at this point. It's a really – what makes the Maloofs hard to figure out is how divided they are, because you have Joe and Gavin who really don't want to give up the team. I mean, remember, their dad – owned and then they had to sell when he died the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
And they talk openly about how much they regretted that and how badly they wanted to make enough money to get back into to, you know, NBA ownership. For them to do almost exactly the same thing again is painful. It's hard. It's not something they want to do. They will only do it because they're forced. On the other side, you have George and the woman from Desperate not Desperate Housewives, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yeah, you just tipped everybody off to your TV viewing selections.
Yes,
there.
Exactly. Can't get enough to, they keep advertising those housewives during the show. I actually watch Top Chef, and I get it stuck in my head. But there's a divide, and they all have almost like an equal share of ownership. Even though Joe and Gavin were the front people and kind of the face of the franchise, there were other family members that own it. And the in-family squabbling makes this all the much harder because what you get from one side isn't necessarily what you hear from someone else. And so it's, you know, they're a mess. And I think if there's one thing that fans in Sacramento and, you know, hoop fans in Seattle and the league office and everybody following this agrees on, is that getting this team out of the Maloof's hands is the best thing that can happen. Like, they're a mess as an ownership group. And the sooner that they can get this resolved one way or another to somebody and get a new arena built, you know, you could still theoretically get that done, get that same deal back and get it done in Sacramento if you had genuinely willing ownership. It's just the Maloofs have burned every bridge.
Yeah, the ownership situation with that team is really just, you know, it's not a great situation. You know, here's kind of the part where I get all the Sacramento Kings fans mad at me, and I want to get your take on this. I honestly don't get the community sort of supporting this team and being so passionate about keeping it in Sacramento, and here's why. So the Kings have been terrible, you know, basically forever. This is going to be their seventh season in a row below 500. That's almost as long as they were relevant, with 8 years when Rick Adelman was there, when they had those teams that went to the playoffs and all that type of stuff. But before that, they had 15 years consecutive where they're below 500. It's a terrible franchise. It's just, they're not good. And in this day and age of League Pass and the internet where you can watch any team, you know, play anywhere, it doesn't seem like it's worth putting up a fight to keep a perennial loser in town unless you're one of the few people who physically go out to the arena to watch these games in person. And attendance has been down, so not many people are doing that. And I understand that, you know, when your team's not winning, it's harder to justify the expense of going out there. And I get all that. But explain to me why bother, you know, as a community when, you know, if the ownership's terrible, the team's been terrible forever, who cares if they leave unless you're one of the people that, you know, have season tickets, which is a relatively small number.
I think it's a civic pride and civic validation thing. Sacramento likes to think of itself as a major city in nationally, and you need a sports team in some ways to help validate that. You know, they're in a state where they've already dealing with, you know, San Francisco/Oakland and yeah. Los Angeles and San Diego, and nobody talks about Sacramento as a destination. So they're thinking that this helps provide validation, and they don't have, you know, there's not a baseball team or a football team or a hockey team, you know, major league anyway, for that city. If the Kings go, you know, they're rooting for UC Davis at this point. So I think that's a lot of what drives even the people who aren't the hardcore basketball fans. I mean, I get the basketball fans doing it, but I think that beyond that, it's a civic pride thing. It's a, you know, we are a major city thing.
Well, you know, that makes some sense. That's a good point. And, you know, I think the other thing that plays into it is when you look at Sacramento, if a team does leave there, you know, what are the odds that another professional team is going to ever come back?
Yeah, almost none. I mean, this isn't, like I said, you always follow the trail of money on these things. And Sacramento is actually a pretty good sized television market, but it is not a per capita wealthy market, certainly not like Seattle.
All right. Well, definitely an interesting story. We'll certainly keep our eyes on it there. Let's get into one of the other games last night. We had the Pacers get a home win over the New York Knicks. Knicks playing without the suspended Carmelo Anthony, of course. Pacers won that game 81-76. That wasn't the third quarter score. That was the final score. Pacers do it with defense. They play at one of the slowest paces in the league. John Schumann of NBA.com pointed out that the Pacers are the best defensive team in the league at defending both the restricted area and the corner three-point shot. So that's going to make you tough to beat. How good are the Pacers? Do you think that the Pacers are legitimate? You know, keep in mind they may get Danny Granger back at some point this season before the playoffs. Do you think the Pacers have enough firepower on the offensive end to take down either Miami or New York in a seven-game series in the playoffs?
Depends on which New York team shows up. I mean, they've been a little streaky and slumpy lately. But I thought going into the season that the Pacers could be the second-best team in the East. I think that in our preseason at PBT, you know, we gave teams potential wins and put that out there. We had them second, even ahead of the Celtics.
Right.
Because they defend, because Paul George was coming along. And I still think that two things have to happen. They have to get Granger back. They have to get him back healthy. They need their shot creation, especially when it gets late in the clock and they can't get their points just via the offense. They don't have that guy to give to and say, oh, just go create something. And Granger does that fairly well. They really miss him. And they really miss the original. Whatever happened to Roy Hibbert? That's on the offensive end. His drop-off is a huge part of their problem. This guy was, and maybe Granger coming back will help, you know, by giving him, making him less of a focus. But, you know, Paul George is playing out of his head and it's not helping that much. I mean, they need Roy Hibbert to be a force inside offensively and not just defensively to really challenge anyone. Because if he's playing at his peak, the Knicks can challenge him a little bit with, they've got Tyson Chandler, but that's why the Pacers gave the Heat trouble last year. They really had to adjust. Suddenly there was Hibbert playing this fantastic ball in the paint, and the Heat had to really pick up and adjust their game to deal with the Pacers.
Yeah, we know the Heat's problems are size and rebounding, right? I mean, rebounding wasn't as much of a problem last year, but it's definitely been an issue this year to the point where the team's really focusing on it. I am concerned about that offensive firepower. I think you do need guys that can create and score. Granger will certainly help that a little bit, but, you know, we're going to need to see how he fits with this team. You know, the Pacers are starting to come along right now, so to reintegrate somebody like that, that's going to be a challenge for them as well.
Agreed. I will say this, though. I think Paul George has made his all-star credential over the last few weeks. I think he's one of those guys who's got a real shot at being a reserve now out of the East.
Yeah, let's just hope he doesn't regress like Hibbert has done so far. I mean, look, I don't think Hibbert's career is over or anything like that, but, you know, he made the all-star team last season. A Jamal McGlure-esque, possible nomination there where we may not ever see him back there. But I don't know. Like you said, his drop-off has been there. He's definitely going to need to find a way to get back close to playing at that level, I think, if the Pacers are going to have a shot, and then they're going to need that healthy Granger. So we'll see what happens there. As we mentioned, Carmelo Anthony missed that game due to the altercation, if you want to call it, with Kevin Garnett earlier in the week. Carmelo decided to wait for KG out by the team bus, wanted to continue the conversation after the game. That's what got him suspended for last night in Indiana. Carmelo Anthony's the leader of the Knicks on offense. They cannot go very far without him. They need his maturity level. What does it say about the fact that Kevin Garnett was able to get in his head like that and get him to kind of lose his cool?
Yeah, I mean, Tyson Chandler even came out and said he thought Kevin Garnett may have crossed the line with some of the things he said to Carmelo Anthony. But you know what? Kevin Garnett does not care. And Kevin Garnett will say the exact same thing during a playoff series. Like, Carmelo Anthony has to be better than that. He has to let it roll off his back. Or he has to do what Tim Duncan did, or does, pretty much every time he faces Garnett. Because Duncan really doesn't like him. And then he just goes at him hard and tries to beat him and tries to make him pay. Or do what, Brandon Jennings did to Nate Robinson the other day, where, Nate talked a little smack and Brandon Jennings goes off and drops 20 points and 4 threes in the third quarter and brings his team back. That's how you get back at KG, not trying to meet him out by the bus. That's not mature. Yeah, I think you mentioned that. And if you're going to lead this team into the playoffs, you need them. And I think what was evident last night, and I think what's been evident the last few games with the Knicks, is how much they missed Raymond Felton as the other guy who can create shots and offense for them out of the pick and roll, because it can't be all Carmelo. They have to have more balance. Felton gave them some of that because he's a good pick and roll point guard. And, him being out with a broken hand has really challenged them.
Yeah, I just think when you're playing up against Kevin Garnett, you just have to treat all that as noise, right? I mean, the guy is the king of the 12-letter words on the basketball court. I mean, he just goes nonstop saying all types of crazy stuff. Even if he said what was rumored to be said, which we're not going to get into here, you could easily look it up. We have it on the site. Even if he's talking about somebody's family or their girlfriend or whatever, you just got to laugh, right? I mean, it's all just noise at this point. So there, I don't think there is a crossing the line where trash talk is concerned. If that's your game, and it clearly is Garnett's game, it has been forever. The guy's been in the league like 17 years. If that's your game and your goal is to get somebody focused on you and the words that you're saying instead of the game on the court, then you have to know that going in. Everybody knows that with KG. Carmelo has to know that. And, you know, he can't get drawn into that type of stuff. You know, the playoffs are going to be that much more intense. You know, who knows what will happen. New York could face Boston at some point in the series. The way Boston defends and plays that aggressive style of basketball, and with KG running his mouth even more the next time since he knows he could get to Carmelo, you know, that's going to be a real problem. And, you know, hopefully Anthony's learned his lesson.
Yeah, I think they made a point. I think the Celtics, since they've gotten Avery Bradley back, their defense has started to go back to where it was. And if they're defending like they were, they become a really tough out in the playoffs because, you know, Rajon Rondo and Paul Pierce and, you know, on an odd night, maybe Jeff Green off the bench or something, one every seven games, will give them enough offense. Like, they will get some points. It was always about their defense being able to handle their offensive lapses, and their defense wasn't good enough for the start of the year, but it started to look like it again. If they get that back, especially by the playoffs, you know, you can't have those kind of distractions. You can't let that stuff get to you because they're not – they will be a tough team to beat.
All right, and then we had the final game from last night. We had Miami playing in Portland, and the Blazers pulled out that victory basically in the last 8 minutes of the game. The Heat were up all night. They blew a 12-point lead in those final 8 minutes. Wesley Matthews with two huge threes in the final minute to seal that game for Portland. What do you make of the Heat at this point of the season? They clearly don't have the focus, you know, that a defending champion should have. At this point in the season, they're only 7-8 on the road. They have a few bad losses. They lost to the Wizards, for God's sakes. I mean, that should never happen no matter what's going on. They lost at Detroit. They lost at Milwaukee. They're still the first, you know, place in the East. They're still the top seed in the Eastern Conference right now. So, you know, it's not like things are off the rails in Miami, but they do have rebounding problems. They do have some focus issues. At what point in the season does Miami have to sort of turn it on to make that run into the playoffs, and do you think they can turn it on?
I think they can. I think we've seen them do it, and I really think this is a focus issue, and start to see the players, I think, come back more after the All-Star break, and as we get into March, you'll see a little bit of that. But I fear that this is just kind of how they're built mentally, that there's just – they rely heavily, because of the style of defense they play and trying to get out and transition and that kind of pressure that they want to apply – you really have to bring energy to be successful that way. This isn't just, you know, running through your offensive sets. They don't, you know, their positionless style, what they've set up is what they want to do, clearly works because they've won a ring with it. They've got the talent, but you can't slough your way through that and be effective. And they just take, you know, if not whole games, a quarter off, and then, you know, Wesley Matthews goes off and they can't really do much about it. And I think it's just, I really think they will come around. I really think that they're still, you know, like I said, they're coasting to the best record in the East, and I think that that's part of it. They haven't felt the pressure of having to put it together for an extended period to make sure they get that top seed. And when they do, though, I still think that they're going to roll through the East, and their big test will come out West. The question ultimately comes down to, you use the regular season if you're the Heat or, you know, the Thunder or some of the elite teams. You use the regular season to build good habits. So in the playoffs, when you're under pressure, when the things are coming quickly and you're having to act on instinct that you're making the right play, and that's what could come back to bite them, is that they're not making the right plays now, and will they, under pressure, make the wrong plays in the playoff?
Well, what was interesting is that if you read the quotes from last night, you read Dwayne Wade's quotes, LeBron James' quotes, they seem to feel like they played their game and they still lost, but I don't think they played their game, because if you look at the shooting percentages of LeBron and Wade, they were horrific. And, you know, one of those guys has to have a dominant night shooting. They wasted a great performance from Chris Bosh, maybe his best offensive performance of the season, actually. But LeBron only scored 15 points. I think he broke a streak of about 50-something games where he had at least 20 points in a game. I would question whether those guys truly are seeing what the issues are right now, because they all seem to feel like, hey, we played our game, you know, defensively we held them to this shooting percentages and we led most of the night and we were fine. But you're not fine when both LeBron and Wade get shut down offensively, are you?
No, and Wade's getting shot down, you know, a fair amount lately, and he hasn't been quite himself this year, and whether that's, again, age or him coming off knee surgery, you know, we can get into it. It's probably a combination of factors, but you're right that they've got – there's nobody else on this team outside those three. Battier can knock down some threes, and Miller can knock down some threes, and you know, Chalmers will hit some shots for you now and again, but they don't have and Ray Allen, we don't want to leave him out of there.
Right.
They're not going to carry the offense. You know, if Ray Allen has a big scoring night, it's because LeBron and Wade were getting into the paint and then kicking it out to him in the corner three and he was open. It's not because Ray Allen creates his own shot anymore. This isn't Seattle Ray Allen anymore. So I think that you're right. I think that they are just not getting how serious this could end up being for them if they don't start to, at some point pretty soon, put it together. The problem is, like we said, they're coasting to the best record in the East.
Yeah.
So the world still has to go through them to get to the finals.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it'll be worth watching after the All-Star break to see if they do, in fact, turn it on and start bulking up that road record just a little bit. All right, well, no podcast is complete unless we start talking about the disaster in Los Angeles known as the Lakers. And yesterday we had team's executive Jim Buss going on ESPN radio in Los Angeles. Wide-ranging interview. He commented basically on everything you needed to know. You know, his take on the coaching, his take on Dwight Howard. You know, basically what he said was, look, we've had a lot of injuries. We haven't had a lot of games with everybody playing together. Dwight Howard's still not 100%. We missed all those games with Steve Nash. Now we have Dwight and Pau Gasol both out with injuries. Jim Buss said it's not time to panic. Like, he's not going to panic. Do you think it's time to panic? And what would you define as panic? I mean, they already fired their head coach once this season. They're not going to do it again. What do you think the Lakers should be panicking? And what would you define as panic for them at this point in the season?
I don't know if they should be panicking. I still think firing a coach 5 games into the season is pretty much panic.
Yeah.
That's pretty much meets my definition of it. And I'm not sure that it was the wrong move long term. I've always kind of questioned why then, as opposed to not doing what they, I don't think they didn't learn anything in those preseason games, in those 5 games that they didn't know back in July in their hearts. And they just didn't want to make the move then. All that said, you know, I buy some of what he says about the injuries, because that's certainly an issue. Look, they just have not been healthy. And even when Wright Howard's been on the court, he's not been healthy. You know, his back is clear. You know, this time off might actually be better for rest and recuperation on his back than anything else. So there is something to that, but the best teams find a way to rise above that. And if the Lakers were hanging around the 7 or 8 seed and being competitive and had a winning record, and you could say, well, they're doing okay, not as good as we expected, but then you could say, well, the injuries are the issue. But the injuries aren't just the issue. It's much bigger than that, and it really all comes back to the defensive end. I mean, their offense is hit and miss, and you can talk about getting rid of Pau Gasol or at the trade deadline and getting more athletic and getting them some easy points. But until they start stopping people from scoring, it's all moot.
Well, you mentioned the defensive end of the floor, and this is something that kind of boggles the mind, okay, because D'Antoni's not a defensive coach. We all understand that. So he's not implementing some new crazy defensive system. So my question is, this is a veteran team. You know, Dwight Howard's a multiple defensive player of the year winner. Pau Gasol knows how to play defense. Kobe Bryant knows how to play defense. Meta World Peace knows how to play defense. What is so difficult for these guys where they cannot figure out the proper rotations defensively? Shouldn't they know how to do this by now?
You would think. It's not a complex scheme, and what they're running isn't, you know, this isn't Thibodeau-esque out there with some very complex pressure scheme, but they're not helping the helper. It's not the first rotation that's usually the, I mean, especially when Howard and Gasol are out there, that's not the problem. You know, the problem is they don't really get any stops out on the perimeter. You know, Steve Nash is almost an orange traffic cone. So the guy dribbles around him and goes in, and Howard makes the first, you know, Howard comes over to step out and stop his guy, but nobody gets Howard's man. And they're giving up all these points in the paint because they're not making the second. And even if they make the second, they don't make the third rotation. Like, nobody's helping out whoever's doing the helping. And suddenly guys are getting really open looks. And the other problem is just their transition defense. And Houston ran them into the ground this week, just outran them. Just, I'm going to push the ball up the floor. And I don't think your bigs in particular, but your players in general, will get back and stop them. And they don't. And you give up 120-something points and you get into a fast-paced game, and the Lakers can't run with the Rockets or any team with young legs like that right now. And look, I wrote about this on the site this week. If the Lakers go 30-17 the rest of the way out, they will get to 45 wins, which probably isn't enough to get to the playoffs, but that's close to it. And they haven't shown the ability to go 30-17. They're going to have to do probably better than that to make the playoffs, and they're going to have to do that. Well, they've got the 7-game Grammy road trip where, you know, Katy Perry kicks them out of the Staples Center for 2 weeks. And so they've got a huge, that they've got games, you know, starting, you know, Friday night against the Thunder, against really good teams that know they can run on the Lakers. So until they shore up the defense, until they don't have the time anymore to bring it together. It was always like, well, they've got time. They can do this. That time is kind of now. That time is they have to start winning and putting together a string of wins right now, starting in the next couple weeks, or they will not make the playoffs.
Yeah, essentially they have to win, you know, 2 out of every 3 of their next games the rest of the way to get to the postseason. I'm still not, you know, in the group that's saying the Lakers aren't making the playoffs. You made the case that it's going to be difficult, you know, but I still just think there's too much talent on that team. I think the teams at the bottom of the Western Conference aren't exactly that amazing where they can't be caught. The Lakers are only like, you know, as long as they stay within 4 or 5 games of that 8th spot, I think it's definitely possible. But again, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot on the defensive end of the floor. Back to the panic talk, do you see the Lakers, you know, let's say this continues for another couple weeks. We're only about, you know, a month away from the All-Star break. If the slide continues and they fall 7, 8, 9, 10 games out of the playoff picture, at that point, does management look to make a trade and shake things up, you know, look into the future?
Yes.
just like that.
I think actually they're looking now. They're saying they're not actually actively talking Pau Gasol trade talks. I think that that is going to change. I think that that is the one asset they have where there is interest from other teams, not a lot of other teams because he's really expensive and he's got bad knees and he's, you know, in his 30s, but there's interest from other teams because he's a quality, you know, all-star level big man in the paint. And there just aren't enough of those guys around. So they can get something for him. I don't think they can get as much as Laker fans would like to think they can get for him, but there's some interest. But they've got to get shooters. They've got to get more athletic. And you know, they don't need in the D'Antoni system. Gasol's not a stretch four. They don't need more bigs. They need to be quicker. They need to be deeper. So I think that they're going to do that. I think they're going to shop him. I just don't know if that's going to happen now or if that's something they end up doing this summer with a move, only because there's just not going to be great options.
They're looking to get 40 cents on the dollar, you know, for Gasol in a trade right now, given his role in the Lakers offense, how he played last season under Mike Brown, who also couldn't figure out how to use him correctly. And then what's going to happen is on his new team, he's going to make the All-Star team the next season because he's still a very skilled big man. He's still a guy that can, you know, play the game. He can pass. He can score. He just needs to be used properly. And it's tough finding a way to do that when you have another big. Last year, you know, Andrew Bynum was very present in the post. Dwight Howard's that this season, and they're just struggling to use him, and using him as a spot up 3-point shooter, I just don't think is the answer.
No, it's definitely not. They need to get him. You know, he's a guy who works better in the post. And look, he can hit the mid range. He can call, you know, he's great at the elbow with his passing. But I think if you put him in an offense almost more like Utah runs, and you put him next to someone like Millsap, and I don't think he's going to Utah. I'm just using that as an example.
Right.
I think that's the kind of place where he would just thrive. And you're right. He'd be like an all-star level player. And the Lakers would be like, whoa, all the Laker fans would be like, why is he playing so well now? It's like, well, because you're using him to his strengths and not asking him to play to his weaknesses. I still think the best coaches, and Phil Jackson was one of those things Phil Jackson does really, really well. Even when he had, you know, Kwame Brown and Swish Parker to deal with. He knows what your strengths are, and he puts you in a position to play to what you do well, not ask you to do the things you don't do poorly. You know, the Lakers aren't doing that right now. They're saying, this is the system, figure out where you fit in it, as opposed to tweaking the system to play to player strengths.
Yeah, and it's, you know, clearly not working at this point. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments, let us know how we're doing, and Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.